The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, College Inflation, Significant Jump in Student Housing Rents Adds Pressure on the Economics of College Degrees. And the cover story article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Student Rents on the Rise, Housing is More Swank and More Expensive at the College Campuses Across the Triangle, written by Elizabeth Egan. UNC Chapel Hill freshman Winner Earnhardt was preparing to have a great year. After having her high school senior year move online in the pandemic, she was hoping to get off to a more normal start in Chapel Hill. She and her roommate moved into a residence hall in August, and Earnhardt was enjoying making friends and getting settled into college life. That all changed after only 2 weeks when COVID-19 clusters in dorms spiked drastically and Carolina closed the residence halls with a few exceptions. Earnhardt could not find an apartment off campus on such short notice, so she stayed in her dorm until she found an opening. But Earnhardt was soon faced with a rising reality in the Triangle's college communities, the skyrocketing price of student housing. Finding a place in her budget, $600 to $800 a month, was difficult. The typical unit in Chapel Hill costs $1,610 a month, according to a study from commercial real estate group CoStar. In comparison, a typical double room on UNC's campus costs $3,507 per semester. Earnhardt isn't the only college student rocked by the price of housing. The current student housing landscape did not always exist like this, though. While parents may fondly remember their undergraduate days of cheap housing near campus, developers and investors have seen opportunities for upscale housing with far more amenities than what college students once had. It's become a major business that has reshaped some of the iconic thoroughfares in the Triangle, such as Franklin Street in Chapel Hill and Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. And big money in student housing is beginning to flow. Kane Realty opened the Stanhope student housing near NC State University in 2015 and sold it in 2021 for a whopping $131 million. In Chapel Hill, Skyon bought the apartment complex Chapel Ridge in early July for more than $52 million. The sale was almost $20 million higher than when it was purchased by more traditional multifamily developer Waypoint Residential in 2017 for $34 million. Eric Bronstein, executive vice president of the Skyon Group, says he and his brother started the student housing company more than two decades ago because they knew there was going to be a nationwide surge in college enrollment and saw it as a business opportunity. Skyon now owns 127 communities across 34 U.S. states. These properties include three luxury apartment complexes in the Triangle, Chapel Ridge and Lark Chapel Hill near UNC, and Red Point Raleigh near NC State. But all this comes at a price. Earnhardt and her roommate eventually found space in an apartment about a mile from campus for around $700 per person per month, but she described the situation as a nightmare. We lived there for about a year but experienced so many problems. We had bugs and leaks galore. The rising expense of housing. Rents across both the United States and North Carolina have been rapidly rising due to inflation. The national average apartment rent increased 17% over the past year. The Raleigh-Durham market had an even larger jump, 21.5% from June 2021 to June of 2022. At the end of June, the average rent in the Triangle was $1,536, up $272 from a year ago. Raleigh-Durham's percent increase was higher than other North Carolina metros and some larger U.S. cities, including Austin, Texas, and Phoenix. These rents, plus the high demand for housing in the Triangle, are causing apartment communities in the area to net skyscraper prices, and apartment complexes are selling for higher than ever. This trend is also bled into apartments specifically built for university students, also known as purpose-driven housing. Near NC State, the DoubleTree Hotel by Hilton in Raleigh, also known as the Brownstone Hotel, has recently closed and will be torn down and replaced with luxury apartments targeted at students. Student housing developer Core Spaces paid $42 million for the hotel at the end of 2021. Joe Gatto, managing director of acquisitions for Core Spaces, says the company plans to build its highest-end product on the space, one reserved for the best locations and universities. Skyens Bronstein says the company is excited about the Chapel Ridge acquisition because they are focused on properties near high-quality universities. Rise in rents in college towns and areas is not a trend unique to the Triangle. In April, ABC News reported that many college towns have seen rents increase more rapidly than the nationwide average. While rents nationally have increased 17% since March of 2020, Chapel Hill saw a 24% jump. Tempe, Arizona saw a 31% hike, and rent in Knoxville, Tennessee has risen by 30%, all in the same time period. Aaron Bockenheimer, executive director of UNC Chapel Hill's off-campus student life and community partnership, says he has seen affordability of off-campus housing options become a dramatically increasing issue for students, he says. A large part of Bockenheimer's job is helping students find off-campus housing that fits their needs. He says that in having conversations with students, he has seen fewer and fewer less expensive options for off-campus living as complexes are being purchased by larger developers. Many properties that are what I would call historically market-rate affordable or sort of naturally occurring affordable housing off-campus have been bought, redeveloped, and come back into the market at a much higher rate. And so we are seeing many of the off-campus properties that students used to look at and say, hey, that's going to be inexpensive for me to live at, are now much more expensive than living on campus, Bockenheimer says. But Skyens Bronstein says the company has increased rents at a more moderate pace than the rate of inflation nationwide. He says the average rate of rent increased at Skyens properties across the country has been 4%. He says Skyens tries to give returning residents to Skyens properties a better deal than new residents, and adds that if communities have a fixed mortgage rate when Skyens purchases them, Skyens is able to keep their rents more stable, but if it is variable, the rates will go up more. Why students live off campus? Students choose to live off campus for a variety of reasons: more space, fewer regulations, easier parking, and wanting to live with more friends. NC State and UNC especially both have a high percentage of students who live off campus. Donna McGilliard, Assistant Vice Chancellor and Executive Director of University Housing at NC State, says around 60% of students live off campus. According to the CoStar Multifamily Housing Report, around one-third of UNC students live on campus, one-third live off campus in Chapel Hill, and one-third live in other communities, including Carrboro and Durham. The majority of NC Central University student population also lives off campus. Quiana Shepherd, Director of Communications and Marketing, says about 39% of students live on campus and 61% live off campus. Duke University is the outlier, with about only a quarter of its undergraduate student population living off campus, according to Eleanor Landis, Assistant Dean of Students and Director of Off-Campus and Community Housing. Landis says all undergraduates are required to live on campus for their first 3 years, and many choose to live on campus their senior year as well. UNC and NC State both only require students to live on campus for their first year, while NC Central has a live-on requirement for 2 years. Carolina Housing Executive Director Alan Blattner says the existence of off-campus housing as an option for students allows UNC students who want to live in on-campus residence halls to do so. We know not every student wants to continue to live on campus all 4 years or during their graduate studies, and to be honest, we can't house them all, so we need a cooperative relationship between on-campus and off-campus, and Aaron and I spend a lot of time trying to help students navigate that, Blattner says. Price of luxury apartments. A large part of the off-campus student housing landscape for Triangle Area Universities is large luxury student-focused apartments like those Skyens owns and the new complex replacing the Brownstone. These complexes are often the closest to college campuses and also make finding and signing a lease more simple than other options. They also boast prices that are expensive to college students and their parents. The majority of these students' targeted apartments have rents higher than average rents in the area. Earnhardt and her roommate had to sign a lease almost a year in advance to secure housing for their junior year. They began touring rentals in September 2021 and signed a lease in October 2021 for a move-in date in June 2022. Finding a place that was reasonably priced has been a nightmare, she says. Off-campus housing is easy to find if you're willing to spend $1,200 a person, but for students who can't afford to do that, it's so hard. The most popular complexes for UNC students include Carolina Square, Lark, University Apartments, Union Apartments, Shortbread Lofts, The Warehouse Apartments, Chapel Ridge, Chapel View, and Granville Towers. Granville Towers, while not located on the university's campus, is owned by UNC and contracted out to a private company. A standard double room in Granville ranges from $1,159 to $1,802 per person. Carolina Square, with 246 apartments, is the most expensive of the group. Rents range from $2,520 for a one-person studio apartment to $1,268 per person for a four-bedroom, $5,072 in total. In comparison, the average rent in Chapel Hill Carrboro area is $1,569, and the average rent in the Durham-Raleigh market, which includes Chapel Hill and Carrboro, is $1,464 per month. The other student-targeted luxury apartments in the area, while less expensive, still come close in cost. Chapel Ridge is more cost-effective, with bedrooms available for $719 per person in a four-bedroom apartment, or $2,876 in total. One-bedroom apartments are available for $1,129. NC State University has even more of these complexes. The Priest Company, a student housing giant based in Raleigh, has 10 properties in Raleigh solely targeted at students. Of these facilities, six are townhome apartments, the rest 105 Friendly, 1820 Centennial, Campus Edge, and Signature 1505 are luxury apartments of the same caliber as those in Chapel Hill. Two-bedroom apartments in 105 Friendly start at $1,065 per person per month, or $2,130 in total. Signature 1505 did not have their prices listed online. A three-bedroom apartment at 1820 Centennial starts at $840 per person, and a furnished three-bedroom apartment at Campus Edge starts at $795 per person. The average rent for the NC State Hillsboro Street area is $1,666, considerably higher than other parts of the city. Northeast Raleigh's average monthly rent is $1,338, and North Raleigh's is $1,430, while Northwest Raleigh's sees an average of $1,497. Since a higher percentage of students at Duke live in dormitories, there are fewer of these large student-targeted luxury complexes in nearby Durham. Landis says many seniors at Duke who choose not to live on campus live in complexes including Campus Walk, The Heights, The Lofts, Trinity Commons, Poplar Meadow, Chapel Tower, Station 9, and Berkshire 9. Rents at Campus Walk are below the average, ranging from $1,125 for a two-bedroom to $1,600 for a three-bedroom. Most other places popular with students are higher. For example, The Heights has rents ranging from $2,692 for one bedroom to $3,649 for two bedrooms. The Loft starts at $1,702 for one-bedroom apartments and $2,485 for two bedrooms, averaging to $1,242 per person. NC Central declined to comment on where most of their off-campus students live, but the NCCU's School of Law website lists popular apartments for students, citing Audubon Lake, Colonial Grand at Research Park, Mission University Pines, South Point Glen, Taylor's Pond, and Meridian Heights. None of these complexes are specifically targeted at students and don't provide features such as individual leases, roommate matching, and study rooms that are common in the purpose-driven luxury complexes. They also have prices that are slightly lower than many. For example, Mission University Pines has one-bedroom apartments available starting between $1,197 and $1,288. Two-bedroom apartments start at $1,399, and three-bedrooms start at $1,814. Off-campus housing interactions. Despite students in the Triangle living in off-campus communities in high quantities, there's not much the schools can do to lower costs. However, many colleges do have programs to provide support to students and their families as they navigate the process, like Bockenheimer's role at UNC. UNC's Department of Off-Campus Student Life, which Bockenheimer leads, works with a third-party vendor to curate a website with apartment and housing listings catered to students. Called Off-Campus Partners, it was purchased by CoStar a few years ago. CoStar also owns Apartments.com, Realtor.com, and other entities. Bockenheimer shares options for students, but the university does not directly ask off-campus student apartment communities to lower their prices. "We just really don't feel like that's our role in the community," he says. Duke University also has similar resources for students who live off campus. Landis says she maintains relationships with property managers and owners, city officials, students, faculty, and staff to provide resources for students who live in Durham, and that affordability is one of the main issues she deals with. Also, like Bockenheimer, Landis does communicate with apartment communities but has no direct say in their pricing. We do have relationships with many of the apartment complex that our students live in, but we are aware of the pressures of increasing rent that our students are facing, she says. However, we can't ask apartment complexes to lower their rents. McAlliard says that while NC State does not have a designated department or director for off-campus student life, the Department of Housing does have staff who provide resources for students who live off-campus and organize housing fairs. She has seen an increase in students who want to live in NC State's campus because of the uptick in off-campus rental prices since the start of the pandemic. While there are no real ways for these universities to change the housing market, Bockenheimer tries to help students find places that fit their needs and budget. Just as an example, I had some students just this summer come to me and say, I want a one-bedroom, one-bath, walkable-to-campus apartment for about $600 a month. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't exist, he says. So let's reframe that expectation. Let's talk about your budget. Where's that coming from? We try to really have those conversations and get students connected with the resources they need because affordability is a dramatically increasing issue for students. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Housing prices finally cool. Peak season is finally approaching in the North Carolina mountains, and with it comes a cooling in house prices as well. Housing demand in Asheville and across Buncombe County, already hot before the pandemic, exploded when COVID-19 arrived. In the first 6 months of 2021, a staggering 788 homes were sold in Asheville alone, way up from the 341 sold in that time frame in 2009, according to multiple listing services data. Meanwhile, another 1,649 homes were sold in the first half of 2021 in the rest of Buncombe County, compared to 593 sold in 2009. For the first half of 2022, that number dipped to 714 in Asheville and 1,533 in Buncombe County. It's gotten more favorable for buyers since the peak of the real estate frenzy, says Mike Figura, who started Asheville's Mosaic Community Lifestyle Realty in 2010 and now has 37 brokers in the market. We've seen the volume of transactions drop by about 15% for Buncombe and Asheville combined. Prices have soared as well. In 2011, the median home price in Asheville was $190,000. By 2019, that number was $316,000. And in 2022, it has jumped to $480,000. Only a few months ago, Figura says buyers were offering $100,000 over asking price and losing out. A lot of dejected buyers, he says. But the market is in a much healthier place right now. It's nice to have a market where not every property is getting into a bidding war. North Hills Peloton store still open for now. Fitness giant Peloton is slimming down, but its cuts haven't impacted its original North Hills store yet. The New York-based company has announced it's cutting around 780 jobs, along with a significant number of retail stores. Peloton opened a store in Raleigh in the main district of North Hills in November. In December, Peloton moved from a pop-up location inside the mall to a more permanent space in the open-air portion of the streets at South Point. Stacy Busher, managing director of operations at Kane Realty, says Peloton has not said anything about leaving its North Hills space. Peloton currently has 86 retail locations and did not specify how many or which locations it plans to close. Popular Carolina Beach Bar for sale. An iconic bar in Carolina Beach that dates to 1957 is for sale. The Silver Dollar Bar and its 1,450 square feet, just steps from the beach, is on the market for $1.9 million, according to a listing on LoopNet. Longtime owner Dava Villapiano is selling the business to retire. It's a gem, says agent Laura Saffer of Eastern Commercial in Raleigh, who says the bar has been listed for sale for more than a week. There's been quite a bit of interest, so many people love the place and have been coming there their whole lives. $17 million expansion eyed in Lumberton. Lumberton is getting more jobs as a New Jersey company expands in the market. Asbury Graphite is investing $16.9 million for an expansion of its current facility in Lumberton, the governor's office announced August 16. The expansion will result in the addition of 22 new jobs. Asbury Graphite makes different kinds of carbon products for the automotive and steel industries. This investment is a significant achievement for the Lumberton plant, says Travis Toth, plant manager for Asbury Graphite of North Carolina. The jobs will pay an average of $43,864, and the company is in line to receive a $65,000 grant from the state's One North Carolina Fund. Roy Williams, AIDS First Tee effort. If you know former UNC Chapel Hill Tar Heel men's basketball coach Roy Williams, you know he is an avid golfer. So it looks like when he was asked to be the keynote speaker at the first tee of the Triangle's annual Night 4 Champions Banquet, recognizing Bob Hatley, the founder and CEO of Paragon Bank, now Town Bank, Williams accepted the invitation gladly. The event is at the Angus Barn Pavilion on October 19 at 6 p.m. First tee honchos tell Biz that Hatley is being recognized for his incessant effort over the past decade to drive projects, fundraising, and awareness of the need for a youth leadership and skills program through the game of golf. My biggest goal for First Tee is to close out our capital campaign, $7.5 million, to build a permanent facility for the chapter, Hatley says. We're just $1 million short, and here's hoping someone who really, really likes Coach Williams will come and put us over the top that night. What's funny is Hatley is an avid Appalachian State University booster, and Carolina is playing App State in Boone in the Mountaineers' first football game of the season. But rivalries are being put aside for a night that is all about the game of golf and helping kids. And finally, NC State campus to get new scooters. NC State University students may soon have a new way to motor around campus. NC State is partnering with SPIN to advance micromobility innovation, further transportation research, and improve safety and rider experience. SPIN, which is planning to deploy a fleet of e-scooters and e-bikes across the campus this fall, will work with faculty to explore ways to enhance micromobility from safety to education. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to our continuing series, 52 Shades of Success. The headline, Turning Tires Green. PRTI is working to transform scrap tires into environmentally friendly energy using processes that can be scaled globally. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the Earth and Equity Project explores the growing awareness, actions, and accountability of businesses and leaders who face opportunities and challenges relating to environmental, social, and governance, ESG, issues. The 52-week project will highlight what selected companies and Triangle executives are doing to address climate change, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and ways to maneuver the new world to the new world of corporate responsibilities. And I should mention, this is now named 52 Shades of Success, Earth and Equity. Until now, tires that have outlived their usefulness have posed an unsolved, ubiquitous problem. But that's about to change, thanks to a diversely experienced team at Product Recovery Technology International, or PRTI. Their solution has the potential to solve the world's tire problem and do so through a vertically integrated process that is sustainable, scalable, and produces positive outcomes, leaving no negative impact on the environment and consuming less energy than alternatives such as grinding tires. While the tire problem continues to escalate, more than 300 million end-of-life tires are discarded annually in the U.S. and an estimated 4 billion tires are currently in landfills worldwide, the PRTI team saw it as an opportunity begging for creativity, automation, and monetization. Tires don't decompose. They will be in the ground in the same form for the next 10,000 years, so our competition is called a landfill, says Chris Hare, CEO of PRTI. Even in North Carolina, where scrap tires have been banned from disposal in landfills since 1990, tire processing facilities in the state sent more than 85,000 tons of scrap tires to landfills in fiscal year 2020-21. Although the 1990 regulation banned tires from most landfills in the state, North Carolina statutes allow two monofilled landfills to accept scrap tires, so some of the 85,000 tons likely stayed in the state and some likely went to landfills in other areas. The goal of sustainability is to make the world environmentally safer and more resilient, not to divert problems from our backyard to another locale. Since its inception, PRTI has set its sights on global scalability, not only because it's the right thing to do to solve environmentally detrimental impacts of discarded tires, but also because it's a financially sound business approach. We're breaking the tires down into oil, gas, solid fuel, and steel, basically cooking or dehydrating the tires into fuels, explains Hare, adding that the company's founders bought technology from a group in Italy that was doing similar tire processing on a smaller scale. We made it work in a more robust and more repeatable way. They did some really great groundbreaking work, but they were focused on a fairly small number of tires. We saw the potential of scalability. If you're solving a problem, solve it one tire at a time, but recognize you have to have a way of solving millions, which means you have to be able to scale it. Figuring out how to create a process that could accept random material. Tires come in a vast array of sizes and weights, from bicycles to cars to tractors. As well as turn that chaotic mix into a standard consistent output was possible because of the cognitive diversity of the PRTI team. Cognitive diversity is Jason's expression, says Hare, referring to PRTI Executive Chairman Jason Williams, best known as the founder of FastMed, one of the most expansively scaled urgent care companies in the U.S. The point is, Hare continues, all of us have backgrounds in various industries, and prior to the last 6 or 7 years, none of us have a history in tires, which meant that we tried to look at the problem of solving tires in ways that people in the tire industry might have overlooked. It's yielded powerful results at PRTI, where more than 2 million tires have been processed on the 8-acre site in rural Franklin County. It's a fully automated, computer-controlled process, illustrating that PRTI is as much a technology company as a waste management facility, a fuels creation company, and an energy business that turns a waste material into electricity to power its data center. We are also a blockchain company that is vertically integrated, Hare adds. We decided the best thing to do in most of the U.S. with the fuels from our tires was to run our own data center. The advantage of the vertical integration is the company makes money at every juncture. They are paid to take the tires, literally the feedstock that fuels the entire operation. They are paid for the steel and byproducts coming out of the process, and they are paid for blockchain transactions and the data center. In our case, what we do with the processing tires is we turn it into more money, which is the circular economy. The point is, how should we as a world create less trash in the first place? And secondly, if you have trash, how do you turn it into something of value? Then you are really recycling, Hare says. PRTI is expanding in the region and plans to open a second site, its first full-scale operation, on an undisclosed location that will likely be within a couple of hours of Franklinton headquarters. Beginning with this second location, future sites will be around 20 acres and will have capacity for larger volumes. The economics work out that if you've got a bigger site, you can get rid of more tires, so you can also make more fuel, make more power, and drive a bigger data center. The new site will... with larger acreage, we'll be able to process in a year what we've done in 4 or 5 years at the test site, Hare says. The expectation is the new sites will take 12 to 18 months to build. PRTI has identified 170 locations around the U.S. that could serve densely populated areas where there are the highest concentration of end-of-life tire disposals. Within North Carolina, where Hare says up to 16 million tires are scrapped each year, he anticipates a need for around half a dozen PRTI processing sites. County governments across the triangle would welcome more options, as Chatham, Orange, and Wake counties have all noted the need for more tire processing companies to combat the high cost of dealing with scrap tires. Wake County had to dispose of nearly 21,000 tons of scrap tires in the fiscal year that ended June 30, 2021, and did so while expenditures totaled more than $440,000 over the revenues collected. In its annual filing with the NC Department of Environmental Quality, Wake County stated, "The lack of competition in central North Carolina for scrap tire management companies that can handle large volumes has allowed the biggest company in the area to charge exorbitantly and dictate terms to the counties." Wake, Chatham, and Franklin County sent their scrap tires to Central Carolina Holdings in Cameron. The need for a more efficient, cost-effective option is clear. At its site, PRTI established a goal of 99% process efficiency across the two 11-hour shifts that the canister chambers are working or cooking tires each day. The company has consistently met the goal and documented its progress. After you've demonstrated the capability at the test site, you know how many tires go in every day, how many tires you process, how much fuel you make, how much power you make, and how many computers you run. Then you can show a scalable model, Hare says. As for the anticipated 170 PRTI processing sites around the country, the options for development are open. Depending on how we scale the business, PRTI could become a public company, or this could be a franchise or licensed business. That journey is yet to be played out, he says. One thing Hare is sure about, they won't be building sites one at a time. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Echo Devo finance page written by Lauren Onasorge. Rural projects get economic boost in North Carolina. So far, state incentives have not flowed to the major metro areas. 2022 is proving to be a banner year for rural economic development, but what about Raleigh and Durham? A look at data coming out of the NC Department of Commerce shows zero projects winning state incentive dollars in the Triangle's major cities so far this year, even as other major investments, such as MetLife's decision to add another 400 jobs in Cary and Apple's move to lease a four-story building in Durham, show growth is happening. Altogether, it has been a huge year for incentivized economic development in the state, even without Durham and Wake counties. Mecklenburg, home to Charlotte, is also absent from the list, though there are projects in nearby Gaston and Cabarrus counties. So far, state incentives are tied to 16,000 potential jobs. A sweep of economic development projects that have scored incentives this year shows the state's Job Development Investment Grant, or JDIG, program is heavily benefiting projects outside of North Carolina's major metros. But economic development officials in the Triangle say they aren't concerned about Wake and Durham not landing any incentivized deals. Ryan Reagan, Vice President of Economic Development for the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce, says there's no slowdown in project activity whatsoever. He estimates two dozen firms are considering his area for an expansion led by life sciences and electric vehicle companies. But in a year with record-setting projects such as VinFast and Chatham County, announcements have been sparse across the core counties of Triangle, Wake, Durham, and Orange. While there have been projects announced, such as Blue Force Technologies planning a drone manufacturing complex in Wake Forest, there have been none that have attracted state incentives packages. That could change. Reagan cites one project in particular that is nearing the finish line, though he declined to give details. Michael Haley, executive director of Wake County Economic Development, recently said his team was working on 37 active projects driven by technology, life sciences, and advanced manufacturing. Startup StashPad charts growth in Durham. A year after its founders relocated the company to Durham's American Underground from California, a startup aimed at software developers has closed on nearly $1.8 million. StashPad raised the sum from a slew of investors, including engineers they'd worked with before, and from the Tweener Fund, led by Triangle serial entrepreneurs Scott Wingo and Robbie Allen. Kara Borenstein, who co-founded the firm with her now husband, Theo Marin, says it's a pre-seed round, which gives the firm a good 18-month runway. Borenstein met Marin while studying computer science at Columbia University in New York. The pair headed off to the Bay Area after graduation, working at software startups Twilio and Nextdoor. Their startup began with one idea, building a better wiki. But the engineers Borenstein was talking to didn't care about the wiki, but they did talk about their process. They were using a notepad to manage their thoughts and ideas, so StashPad was born. Borenstein describes it as a notepad to help developers stay in flow so they can do their best work. Ex-financier charged with wire fraud. A former Morgan Stanley advisor in Wilmington, already charged with defrauding clients, now faces criminal charges. Sean Good faces two felonies in federal court, wire fraud and money laundering. The case contains many of the same allegations included in the civil suit the Securities and Exchange Commission filed against Good earlier this year. According to a criminal information filing, Good executed a Ponzi scheme against victims who were Good's clients at Morgan Stanley. Good, investigators claim, got clients to invest in what they thought were real estate development projects and tax-free municipal bonds, which Good described as being low-risk investments. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Alan Masaryk, CEO of troubled Durham-based Avaya, to analysts after an earnings report that led many to doubt the future of the firm. I understand very clearly that there is a disappointment, there's worry, there's concern, but I think it would be a mistake to look at sort of the Q3 results and extrapolate that out and say, this is the future of the company. I don't buy that at all. And finally, a big number, $8.4 billion. Vista Equity Partners' pending $8.4 billion buyout of Seattle-based tax software firm Avalara is just its latest deal with Triangle Ties. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Luxury homes rise in Chatham County, with growth expected executive-level homes to be in demand. The development team behind a Chatham County luxury home community years in the making thinks demand for its community will explode over the next few months. Summit has 49 home sites ranging from 1 to 6 acres that target the executive community of the Triangle. 9 have sold thus far, and the development team behind the community projects more demand in the coming months, thanks in part to the bevy of big job announcements in Chatham County and the surrounding area recently. Also, the community will be featured in the Triangle Parade of Homes this October. We've just been waiting for the market to be right because we knew it would be the most special multi-million-dollar neighborhood that we've seen in that area, says Rex Vick Jr., president of Apex-based Windjam Companies. We're thinking we're going to get a lot of sales in this upcoming year. Sage Built, a subsidiary of Windjam, is the home builder for Summit. The community sits between Farrington and Pittsboro off Mount Gilad Church Road. There's nobody competing with us at that price point, Vic says. The governor's clubs of the world are kind of built out. They might have a few lots to build on left, but we're the only true new community coming out of the ground that's going to be able to handle this expansion. There's a certain component of people who did not want to cross the lake. Now it's a race to get on the other side of the lake. New restaurant distillery coming to Oxford. Oxford Oaks Distillery is set to open in late October or early November, says Paul Shelton, one of the founding partners of the concept. The distillery will occupy about 8,000 square feet at 127 College Street in Oxford, with the restaurant occupying another 2,000 feet within the space. Shelton says the project will give Oxford, a fast-growing city about half an hour north of Durham, two options it currently doesn't have: a distillery and a high-end restaurant with linen tablecloth and nice flatware, he says. I've lived here for over 20 years, Shelton says. The town has turned the corner. It's probably going to be the next Clayton. The distillery will make several different spirits, including vodka, gin, rum, and whiskey. Details are still being hammered out about the restaurant, including its name. Foods such as scallops, fillets, and lobster will be on the menu. Shelton says the members have invested around $300,000 to $400,000 so far, and they have borrowed another $1.3 million. He anticipates turning a profit quickly because of the restaurant component and envisions about 50 employees eventually. Sanford approves subdivision. Another large development received approval recently in Sanford. The Brookshire Conditional Zoning District plans to include 396 single-family homes and 273 apartment units for a total of 669 new residences plus commercial space. The site is located along Boone Trail Road in the northwest corner of the city. The original rezoning for this land was approved last November. The rezoning was hotly contested in the city before narrowly passing a city council vote 4-3 in favor of rezoning. The developer is Pinnacle Partners LLC, which shares an address with Raleigh-based Duke Lazara Development. The CEO of Duke Lazara Development, Terry Slate, is listed as managing member of Pinnacle Partners. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Jim Anthony, one of the founders of Wilson-based Averix Bio. The company recently bought back its facility from Wilson County and is considering building another 300,000 square feet of industrial space on the property. We are contemplating constructing additional manufacturing space in the existing building and on the surplus of land. And finally, a big number, 948. The number of new homes being planned in Lillington through the development of two new subdivisions, according to Eric Brownlee, manager of Chatham Capital Group. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromet. Crossroads Plaza site nets premium price. Stealthy investor pays $10 million for Cary property. A singular parcel in the Cary Shopping Center recently changed hands for $10 million. The sale price was a major jump from the last time the property was sold. The Texas-based seller bought the property for $1.49 million in 2017. The new buyer scooped up the property this month for $10.4 million as part of a federal tax program known as 1031 Exchange. Listed as 2001 Walnut LLC, the seller is affiliated with Moran Capital of Dallas. The buyer, operating as Maxim Carey LLC, lists Eric Markle of Charlotte as its registered agent. Markle declines to disclose the buyer's company name, but says he works for the Delaware Incorporated Group on acquiring assets. Located at 2001 Walnut Street, the property is an outparcel in the bustling Crossroads Plaza shopping center. The lot holds a four-tenant building measuring 12,380 square feet. Tenants include Burger Fi, Cava, America's Best Contacts and Glasses, and Heaven Foot Spa Nails Lounge. The building previously was home to a Bob Evans location. The new buyer plans to keep the property operating as it is. The building was built in 2000 and remodeled in 2019. The lot measures 1.98 acres. The property's combined assessed value is $3.45 million, according to Wake County property records. Markle confirms the purchase was part of a 1031 exchange for the buyer. A 1031 exchange allows for like-kind real estate to be swapped while deferring capital gains tax on the sale. However, the exchange requires that the replacement property be of equal or greater value and purchased within a short time frame. The purchase is the company's first in the Cary market, but not its first in North Carolina, Markle says. Cary continues to be a hot market for investors. In June, Waverly Place Shopping Center fetched a price of $88.5 million. Raleigh's oldest brewery forced to move. Big Boss Brewing, which dates to 2006 and is Raleigh's oldest craft brewery, is leaving its taproom space and relocating to a new location. Its current home, located at 1249 Wicker Drive, will soon be the site of a mixed-use development. The property's owners, Grub Ventures of Raleigh, has an adaptive reuse project planned for the site. The properties are adjacent to the Raleigh Ironworks development, a project co-developed by Grub. The three warehouses will be incorporated into the new development, which will be similar to the firm's Dock 1053 development, says Mackenzie Wilson, director of Grub's commercial leasing. We're planning on keeping the three warehouses as they are and turning them into different types of office, retail, and probably some production as well, Wilson says. The warehouses were built in 1977. Events firm bets on downtown. A downtown space is the new home for local business Joy Worthy Company. Owned by Lawrence Stevens, the company holds events and workshops centered around arts and crafts and emotional wellness. Located at 131 South Wilmington Street, the two-story building was built in 1920. Empire Properties bought the property in 2002 and has worked to restore the building. Other tenants include Gravy, an Italian restaurant owned by Empire Eats. The 1,245-square-foot space was previously MedFirst Medical Center. Stevens is aiming to open the location this fall. Empire Properties, with input from Stevens, is upfitting the space. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Brad Grossman of Helium Comedy on Goodnight's Comedy Club's new space. The club recently opened in the Village District, where property owner Regency Centers help upfit the space. Everybody in the community is super excited to see Goodnight's live on, and Regency is a part of that. And finally, a big number, 46%. That's how much hotel total taxable sales were up when comparing May 2019 and May 2022, according to the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association. Restaurant sales were up 23% and tavern sales were up 42% for the same time period. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page, written by Zach Ezone. Pharma optimistic after clinical trial. Verona Pharma is developing treatment for forms of COPD. A local drug maker has hit its targets in a late-stage clinical trial, putting the company on a potential path toward obtaining its first approval from regulators. Verona Pharma, which has dual headquarters in Raleigh and London, announced August 9 that a study evaluating its inhaled maintenance treatment of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, has finally met its primary and secondary endpoints. COPD refers to a group of lung diseases that can block airflow and cause breathing-related problems such as bronchitis. The company's stock price soared after the trial announcement, and the company moved to build on this momentum with a public offering that will generate net proceeds of more than $100 million. The trial, called Enhance 2, included nearly 800 patients with moderate to severe COPD symptoms that received doses of either the study drug ensifentrine or placebo twice daily for 24 weeks. The study hit its primary and secondary endpoints, with the treatment demonstrating improvements in lung function and reduced rates and risks of COPD exacerbations. In addition to this trial, the company is evaluating ensifentrine in another nearly identical phase 3 study called Enhance 1 that includes a longer look at the safety of the drug over 48 weeks. Enrollment in that trial, which also includes about 800 patients, is completed, and Verona plans to report top-line data from the study near the end of the year. If the Enhance 1 results are similarly positive, the company expects to submit a new drug application to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in the first half of 2023, CEO David Zaccardelli said during an earnings call August 9. We're encouraged by the Enhance 2 trial results, and because of the design and the structure of the Enhance 1 study, we think the read-through should be quite strong, he said. The proceeds from the public offering, which could increase to $140.4 million if the underwriters exercise their full option to purchase additional shares, will fund the development of ensifentrine, commercial preparation activities, and the drug's commercial launch. The drug represents a significant opportunity as it would be the first FDA-approved product for the clinical stage company. Former Kroger to house biotech site. The transformed site of a former Kroger store in Midtown Raleigh will soon be home to one of the Triangle's growing life sciences companies, Morrisville's Targan, developed systems to improve health in commercial poultry and other animal protein industries, is leasing all 100,000 square feet of the upcoming Midtown Bio Center at 350 East Six Forks Road. Chapel Hill-based developer East West Partners acquired the property last year for $13 million, and CBRE Raleigh is handling leasing for the project. Arco Design Build is handling construction on the project, according to CBRE Raleigh. The building is under redevelopment and set to deliver next spring. When finished, the site will include office, lab, and biomanufacturing space. The site has remained vacant since Kroger closed its store in 2018. ECU Health closes COVID testing sites. Due to a significant decrease in demand, ECU Health closed its COVID-19 testing sites at the end of July and now plans dozens of layoffs. The health system notified state officials in July of the permanent closures of sites at 13 of its medical group clinics and a drive-through site in Greenville. As a result, the hospital system will lay off 61 employees beginning September 23rd. And in the He Said It section, WakeMed President and CEO Donald Ginzig on its recent proposals to the state to build two new facilities in Wake County. WakeMed wants to build a 150-bed mental health hospital in the eastern part of the county and a 45-bed acute care hospital in Garner. These projects reflect our community-wide commitment to provide area individuals and families with greater access to the right health care in the right health care settings. And a big number, $475 million. That's how much Catalent, a global life sciences company, is paying for a full-service contract development and manufacturing organization in Greenville called Metrics Contract Services. The site in northern Greenville totals about 333,000 square feet with six manufacturing suites and two packaging lines that can support development and commercial supply programs and a team of more than 400 employees, which Catalent says it intends to retain. And now, in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene, where we'll read the nonprofit briefs. Wake Tech Foundation celebrates record year. The Wake Tech Foundation is celebrating a record-breaking year, raising $7.7 million in the 2021-22 fiscal year. That exceeds the previous year's total by $800,000. The school says some of the largest donations benefited biotechnology and automotive technology programs. This is particularly impressive given the challenges we've all faced in the past few years, says Vice President of Development Matt Smith. We're extremely grateful for the support of this generous community. It shows us that people understand and appreciate Wake Tech's key role in improving economic mobility and changing lives. Corporate giving accounted for 83% of the funds raised. WakeMed, UNC Rex, and Duke Raleigh hospitals combined to contribute in-kind gifts of clinical training worth $1.5 million, and Eli Lilly contributed $1.02 million to establish the Lilly Science and Technology Endowment to support life sciences programs. CapTrust Foundation names new exec. Heather Shanahan has joined CapTrust as the Director of Endowments and Foundations after previously serving as the Executive Director of the Ronald McDonald House in Chapel Hill. Shanahan will work with Eric Bailey, Head of Endowments and Foundations, to support advisors with their clients and to continue to grow the firm's market presence in the space. Before the Ronald McDonald House, Shanahan spent more than 6 years at Mass Mutual developing an array of experience such as recruiting, coaching, and developing advisors, client management, and marketing strategy. She is particularly passionate about supporting women in the financial services industry. Book Harvest opens new family space in Durham. Book Harvest Durham opened its new 1,390-square-foot family space July 19 at its offices at 2501 University Drive in Durham. The area is full of books, wall toys, a magnet wall, reading nooks, and more that is designed to make it easy for children and families to play, learn, and read together. The books in the family space, in both English and Spanish, are available for children to keep. We know that children and families not only need access to books, but also to spaces that are safe, inviting, and engaging learning environments, said Tabitha Blackwell, Executive Director of Book Harvest Durham. Outreach Program has new Raleigh home. SHIP Community Outreach has moved to a new building at 2635 South Saunders Street in Raleigh. The new facility will house all of SHIP's services in one location, including the Gallery Grocery Store, which offers quality nutritional food at discounted prices. The site is also the new home to a boutique that offers women quality clothes at a discount and a service that helps people get ready for the workforce. And finally, Partnership seeks to connect. International Focus, the Raleigh-based group that looks to promote a greater understanding of the world's cultures and their impact here in the Triangle, has announced a new partnership with Activate Good. Activate Good helps people in the area find volunteer opportunities that fit their interests and skill sets. Activate Good has nearly 600 partner organizations and more than 35,000 volunteers. International Focus says the partnership will connect the Triangle's many motivated citizens with its international community in ways never before realized and to the benefit of all. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Viewpoint to read the editor's notebook. Written by Sugata Mukherjee, Editor-in-Chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Parties Must Compromise on Medicaid Expansion. If one separates out countries such as Qatar, Brunei, Macau, Luxembourg, and a few other tiny nations, the United States is easily the wealthiest country in the world, with its gross domestic product tied to the purchasing power parity nearing $60,000 per capita. With wealth comes responsibility and moral duty. As much as we would like to believe that everyone has a fair chance to prosper and create wealth in their lifetime, it simply is not true. There are millions who are not as fortunate as us. The reasons for this income and wealth disparity are plenty, but we are not going to delve into that issue here in this column. But we are going to talk about a moral obligation undertaken by the North Carolina General Assembly to provide some 600,000 North Carolinians with health care coverage through the Medicaid expansion provision. The federal government has offered all 50 states the chance to broaden coverage to people making up to 138% of the federal poverty level, or around $38,000 a year for a family of four. That provision was in the Affordable Care Act of 2010 and was in operation in 2014. North Carolina is one of just 12 states that have yet to expand Medicaid. For the past 8 years, state lawmakers were resistant to this generous offer. But this year, the Republican-led House and Senate made progress, keeping an eye on the larger prize, helping folks who do not have adequate health care coverage. But the Senate version of the Medicaid expansion bill had a provision that would loosen the state's Certificate of Need, or CON, process that every health care provider must adhere to in order to add hospital beds or medical equipment such as MRIs and scanners. Understandably, the hospital association that represents the state's 120 hospitals did not like the provision and now has refused to endorse the Senate version of the bill. The House bill does not have the CON provision. Hospital executives worry if the CON provision is passed under its current form, private health care groups and health care venture capital firms who have no responsibility to offer charity and indigent care to the state's poorest will skim out the profitable operation of hospitals by adding operating room beds and equipment that they know would attract patients who have insurance with a healthy reimbursement policy. That is a legitimate concern. But there is a way out of it to make sure both parties understand the long-term benefit and our collective moral duty to help the people who need assistance the most. If we are going to loosen the CON provision, the non-hospital parties must take responsibility to offer indigent and charity care at the same rate provided by hospitals such as WakeMed, UNC, Duke, and Atrium Health. And in return, the new entrants who win bids must also be eligible for federal, state, and local tax exemptions. North Carolina's largest hospitals reaped some $1.8 billion in tax exemptions in 2020 alone. No charity care, no new beds or equipment for you. And North Carolina must audit the numbers at the end of the year. This is big business, and hospitals don't want to give an inch without a compromise. But that compromise is available. Make the rules proportionately the same for everyone. Competition would thrive, and North Carolinians would win. But first, we need to take care of those 600,000 North Carolinians, a number that is growing fast and with every passing month. It's the right thing to do, and lawmakers need to step up. And in general news, Raleigh clears path for hundreds of new homes. The Raleigh City Council paved the way for multiple residential developments on August 16 as it approved three annexation requests linked to proposed projects. The first was for 60 acres off Watkins Road in northeast Raleigh. The land is owned by Raleigh's Carlton Group of North Carolina, which paid $1.6 million for it in 2017. Plans call for 100 detached homes with a density of 1.65 acres per acre. 1.65 units per acre. Next, council approved the annexation of 15 acres off Thornton Road east of Capitol Boulevard. The land is owned by D.R. Horton and plans call for 110 townhomes. D.R. Horton acquired the land in late 2021 for a little more than $1 million. Finally, the council approved annexing 15 acres between Page Road and Globe Road near Briar Creek. The land is owned by the Focus Properties of Raleigh. Plans call for a maximum of 84 townhomes. The company acquired the four parcels over multiple transactions between 2019 and 2021 for slightly under $1 million combined. And that was written by David Pertell. And we'll end with the Business Pulse survey. The question, where should RDU Airport's next international flight go to? There were 677 responses. Number one, Asia at 43%, more European destinations, 36%, more Caribbean destinations, 11%, South America, 4%, Mexico, Central America, 3%, and Africa, 3%. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.